University of Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. June Examination, Session 2008. English as a Second Language. Paper 4. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the recording to be louder, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the test. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the test. Look at questions 1 to 6. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. You will hear each item twice. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answer should be as brief as possible. You will hear each item twice. Question 1. Why is Pia worried about the arrival of her gift to her friend?
Hello, I'd like to send some flowers as a birthday gift, but I've left it rather late. It's my friend's birthday tomorrow. How soon could you deliver them to her?
It depends on where your friend lives. Up to 100 miles away, and the flowers could arrive today if you wish. Further than that, and the order will take up to a week to arrive.
Oh, that's fine. She only lives about 20 miles away, and I don't want them delivered until tomorrow. Hello, I'd like to send some flowers as a birthday gift, but I've left it rather late. It's my friend's birthday tomorrow. How soon could you deliver them to her?
It depends on where your friend lives. Up to 100 miles away, and the flowers could arrive today if you wish. Further than that, and the order will take up to a week to arrive.
Oh, that's fine. She only lives about 20 miles away, and I don't want them delivered until tomorrow.
Question 2. Juan leaves a message on his cousin's answering machine. What is the reason for the celebration?
We've arranged a family concert, followed by lunch, to celebrate our parents' wedding anniversary. It's on Saturday, September the 7th, at 11 o'clock in the morning. Hope you can come. We've arranged a family concert, followed by lunch, to celebrate our parents' wedding anniversary. It's on Saturday, September the 7th, at 11 o'clock in the morning. Hope you can come.
Question 3. Give the title and number of the recommended course book.
Hello. I want to register for an advanced level language course. I understand it starts next Wednesday. Can you give me some details of times, costs and course books, please?
Yes. They're all on this leaflet. And here's the book you'll need. It's called Prepare for Your IGCSE, and you can buy it in the college bookshop. The book number is 364-5679.
Hello. I want to register for an advanced level language course. I understand it starts next Wednesday. Can you give me some details of times, costs and course books, please?
Yes. They're all on this leaflet. And here's the book you'll need. It's called Prepare for Your IGCSE, and you can buy it in the college bookshop. The book number is 364-5679.
Question 4. Where exactly might Philippe find somewhere to stay? Give two details.
Hello, is that the youth hostel? I'd like to book accommodation for tomorrow night, please.
OK, I'll just check for you. How long would you like to stay with us?
4 nights, please.
I'm sorry, we're full at the moment, but we have another hostel on the other side of town, and I know they have rooms available.
Thank you. I'll try there. Hello, is that the youth hostel? I'd like to book accommodation for tomorrow night, please.
OK, I'll just check for you. How long would you like to stay with us?
4 nights, please.
I'm sorry, we're full at the moment, but we have another hostel on the other side of town, and I know they have rooms available.
Thank you. I'll try there.
Question 5. How can Tom afford to buy his theatre ticket?
Hey, Tom, you know that play we want to go and see? They're offering half-price tickets for tomorrow afternoon. It says you have to go and queue for them. The customers who get there first can buy the tickets. There are no telephone bookings.
Well, let's go then. But I only have £15.
Oh, Tom, that will be plenty. Tickets range from £18 to £50 full price. Hey, Tom, you know that play we want to go and see? They're offering half-price tickets for tomorrow afternoon. It says you have to go and queue for them. The customers who get there first can buy the tickets. There are no telephone bookings.
Well, let's go then. But I only have £15.
Oh, Tom, that will be plenty. Tickets range from £18 to £50 full price.
Question 6. What does the guard on the train offer to do, and how will this help?
Excuse me, this is the last train to connect with the ferry crossing at 9:58. We're already 15 minutes delayed on this service. How will I catch the last ferry? I don't want to spend the night on the platform.
We were delayed leaving the main station. But wait, I can phone ahead to the ferry terminal for you and ask them to wait for us so that you can catch your crossing.
Excuse me, this is the last train to connect with the ferry crossing at 9:58. We're already 15 minutes delayed on this service. How will I catch the last ferry? I don't want to spend the night on the platform.
We were delayed leaving the main station. But wait, I can phone ahead to the ferry terminal for you and ask them to wait for us so that you can catch your crossing.
That is the last question of questions 1 to 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. Listen to the following interview with the manager of a mineral water company and then complete the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Hello and welcome to the Black Mountains. I'm here to meet the director of a new mineral water company, Water for All. He's hit the news headlines because of his environmentally friendly attitude and creative ideas. Thomas Krenn, please tell us how you're helping the world to become both cleaner and greener.
Certainly. I grew up here in the Black Mountains to the sound of this clear, cold, rushing water. It was simply part of my life.
So that gave you the idea of supplying bottled water, and presumably your water comes from this region?
Yes. Its source is in these mountains. Plenty of people bottle water and sell it, but I decided to start a company with a difference. It would sell mineral water and, at the same time, help people in other lands to have access to fresh water.
How far have you been successful in your aim?
I started the company only 3 years ago with the purpose of funding clean water projects around the world. So far, we've been able to install pumps and sanitation systems in India and Mali.
Just by using some of the profits from the water bottle sales?
Yes, the profit from each bottle sold provides clean water for one person for 1 month.
It must be very satisfying for the customer to know that this purchase is helping someone else too.
That's the idea. Then I thought about it a bit more and reasoned that our company also needed to do something to make the actual drinking bottles environmentally friendly. 15 million plastic drinking water bottles were bought in one small country alone last year. Multiply that by lots of countries and consider the fact that plastic bottles do not decompose, and you realise the size of the world rubbish problem caused by bottled water alone. It seemed to me that by selling water in plastic bottles, we were helping the clean water problem, but at the same time contributing to the non-biodegradable waste problem.
So what did you do about it?
I invented the first fully biodegradable drink bottle. Hopefully other companies will follow this idea for their own packaging now. It's made entirely from corn.
Corn? You mean the crop that's used to make oil and bread?
Yes, and it decomposes in 12 weeks. Normal plastic bottles take centuries to rot, so just imagine the problems.
Excellent. So you help the environment as well as other people?
Yes. And I have another cleaning up project underway. I'm about to launch a rubbish muncher.
What's that? A type of robot, perhaps?
Well, it's simply a machine which will fit over any river and can gather and remove up to 45 tons of litter every year.
Very good. I look forward to seeing many rubbish munchers in place on the world's rivers. Thomas Krenn, thank you very much for your green and creative ideas, and every good wish for the future of your company.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Hello and welcome to the Black Mountains. I'm here to meet the director of a new mineral water company, Water for All. He's hit the news headlines because of his environmentally friendly attitude and creative ideas. Thomas Krenn, please tell us how you're helping the world to become both cleaner and greener.
Certainly. I grew up here in the Black Mountains to the sound of this clear, cold, rushing water. It was simply part of my life.
So that gave you the idea of supplying bottled water, and presumably your water comes from this region?
Yes. Its source is in these mountains. Plenty of people bottle water and sell it, but I decided to start a company with a difference. It would sell mineral water and, at the same time, help people in other lands to have access to fresh water.
How far have you been successful in your aim?
I started the company only 3 years ago with the purpose of funding clean water projects around the world. So far, we've been able to install pumps and sanitation systems in India and Mali.
Just by using some of the profits from the water bottle sales?
Yes, the profit from each bottle sold provides clean water for one person for 1 month.
It must be very satisfying for the customer to know that this purchase is helping someone else too.
That's the idea. Then I thought about it a bit more and reasoned that our company also needed to do something to make the actual drinking bottles environmentally friendly. 15 million plastic drinking water bottles were bought in one small country alone last year. Multiply that by lots of countries and consider the fact that plastic bottles do not decompose, and you realise the size of the world rubbish problem caused by bottled water alone. It seemed to me that by selling water in plastic bottles, we were helping the clean water problem, but at the same time contributing to the non-biodegradable waste problem.
So what did you do about it?
I invented the first fully biodegradable drink bottle. Hopefully other companies will follow this idea for their own packaging now. It's made entirely from corn.
Corn? You mean the crop that's used to make oil and bread?
Yes, and it decomposes in 12 weeks. Normal plastic bottles take centuries to rot, so just imagine the problems.
Excellent. So you help the environment as well as other people?
Yes, and I have another cleaning up project underway. I'm about to launch a rubbish muncher.
What's that? A type of robot, perhaps?
Well, it's simply a machine which will fit over any river and can gather and remove up to 45 tonnes of litter every year.
Very good. I look forward to seeing many rubbish munchers in place on the world's rivers. Thomas Krenn, thank you very much for your green and creative ideas and every good wish for the future of your company.
That is the end of question 7. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Listen to the following interview about tea harvesting, and then complete the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Welcome to a tea plantation in Kericho, Western Kenya. Kericho is a bustling town in the cool highlands, 390 kilometres from Nairobi. It's the real home of tea, and I've come here to talk to a tea picker about his current situation. Mr. Matiko, could you tell us what's happening here?
Certainly. You've seen photos of us on your tea boxes and packages, people picking and carrying baskets of tea, haven't you?
Yes, always. In fact, that picture signifies that the tea is of a high quality. It means that it's hand-picked, doesn't it? I know that you pickers have taken care with the leaf selection, and so we enjoy the tea we drink.
Exactly. Now all that is under threat, as there's a plan that all tea will be picked by machine in future. All our jobs and livelihoods are under threat.
Tell us more.
The machines will pick faster than we can. We have 63,000 tea workers, and all our jobs will be gone if the machines take over the tea harvest. We have had family members working here since the 1920s, when tea farming began in these fields, 2,000 metres above the Great Rift Valley. Tea is our country's leading export.
And presumably tea companies are the main employers too.
Yes, tea production is very labour-intensive. Traditionally, we pick tea by hand and put it into huge baskets carried on the back. We pick about 50 kilos of tea a day.
And the machines?
They're managed by two workers only, and they're able to collect up to 1,300 kilos each day.
But surely the machines don't select leaves as you hand pickers do.
Of course not. And some tea producers realise this and know that the quality will disappear from their tea if they rely on machines. The machines make no choice about which leaf to pick. They just cut the whole lot down indiscriminately.
Surely that helps the tea picker's cause then?
Yes, but a few manufacturers sell their tea as powder, not as leaves. They sell powdered instant tea at a lower cost and sacrifice the quality.
How terrible! That will mean no jobs for traditional hand tea pickers.
That's the problem. Our employment means that we can feed and educate our families. We have been trained in tea picking. That is our farming skill. So if it stops, we'll be left with nothing.
We can help you then, by only buying tea that is advertised as being picked by hand.
Yes, you can.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Welcome to a tea plantation in Kericho, Western Kenya. Kericho is a bustling town in the cool highlands, 390 kilometres from Nairobi. It's the real home of tea, and I've come here to talk to a tea picker about his current situation. Mr. Matiko, could you tell us what's happening here?
Certainly. You've seen photos of us on your tea boxes and packages, people picking and carrying baskets of tea, haven't you?
Yes, always. In fact, that picture signifies that the tea is of a high quality. It means that it's hand-picked, doesn't it? I know that you pickers have taken care with the leaf selection, and so we enjoy the tea we drink.
Exactly. Now all that is under threat, as there's a plan that all tea will be picked by machine in future. All our jobs and livelihoods are under threat.
Tell us more.
The machines will pick faster than we can. We have 63,000 tea workers, and all our jobs will be gone if the machines take over the tea harvest. We have had family members working here since the 1920s, when tea farming began in these fields, 2,000 metres above the Great Rift Valley. Tea is our country's leading export.
And presumably tea companies are the main employers too.
Yes, tea production is very labour-intensive. Traditionally, we pick tea by hand and put it into huge baskets carried on the back. We pick about 50 kilos of tea a day.
And the machines?
They're managed by two workers only, and they're able to collect up to 1,300 kilos each day.
But surely the machines don't select leaves as you hand pickers do?
Of course not. And some tea producers realise this and know that the quality will disappear from their tea if they rely on machines. The machines make no choice about which leaf to pick. They just cut the whole lot down indiscriminately.
Surely that helps the tea picker's cause then?
Yes, but a few manufacturers sell their tea as powder, not as leaves. They sell powdered instant tea at a lower cost and sacrifice the quality.
How terrible! That will mean no jobs for traditional hand tea pickers.
That's the problem. Our employment means that we can feed and educate our families. We have been trained in tea picking. That is our farming skill. So if it stops, we'll be left with nothing.
We can help you then, by only buying tea that is advertised as being picked by hand.
Yes, you can.
That is the end of question 8. In a moment, you will hear question 9. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 9. Listen to the following interview about the world's highest railway and then answer the questions below. You will hear the interview twice.
Good evening and welcome to Our World, coming directly from the Kunlun Mountains on an historic occasion. The world's highest railway, running for 4,000 kilometres from the plateau of Tibet to Beijing, is complete and in working order. Here is Mr. Zhang to explain all this to us.
Welcome to not only the highest, but the most ambitious railway in the world. This has been made possible by 40,000 people working together and by overcoming some enormous engineering challenges. We engineers have completed 80 kilometres of tunnels and bridges, nearly all built higher than 3,800 metres above sea level.
This project must have taken you ages to build.
It was actually begun in 1950, and by 1984 the line had reached Gulmud in western Qinghai. We then thought of extending it further. However, at 6,500 metres above sea level, the Kunlun Mountains, plus the Tibetan Plateau, and the consistently high passes and permafrost grasslands would have made the job too difficult.
But you have triumphed, and now you've done all of this, and there are proposals to extend the railway line further to the Indian border, perhaps, or even across the Himalayas.
Yes, that is so. In 2001, it was decided to take up the challenge, and here we are. We completed it a year ahead of schedule. Technology has advanced so much in recent years that this has made our £2.3 billion project possible.
Will travellers on the railway feel ill at such high altitudes?
Our highest railway pass is at 5,200 metres, so yes, passengers could suffer from lack of oxygen. The train's manufacturer, a Canadian firm, has included double-paned windows with ultraviolet filters to reduce glare from the sun. They have also installed oxygen level regulators in the coaches, and these come into operation when the altitude changes. In fact, anyone feeling ill can breathe in oxygen-rich air at various locations in the train. We need all these health and safety measures. After all, the 4,000-kilometre journey from Beijing to Lhasa lasts 48 hours.
Oh, those precautions sound very good and should make it easier for people to travel on this route. But won't the use of this line damage the environment?
Much of the land on the Tibetan Plateau has frost under the surface and is particularly affected by global warming. To neutralise this, the railway relies on a system of metal posts half buried in the soil. These will channel heat to the surface to keep the track working in freezing conditions.
Are you all very excited by this new railway? Surely it will make travel and communication from what was once such a remote part of the world so much easier for you.
Yes, but on the other side, the whole world may flood in to visit us and could wreck our fragile culture. We have to strike a balance between modern technology and its advantages and our traditional way of life. The train drivers are often reminded of this when camels wander over the track. The area belonged to the animals before the railway came. But there are lovely moments on this journey. You can visit Tangu La, the highest station in the world. Or you can cross a great river on hundreds of kilometres of rail bridge.
Mr. Zhang, we wish you much success with the highest railway, the railway in the clouds. Thank you.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Good evening, and welcome to Our World, coming directly from the Kunlun Mountains on an historic occasion. The world's highest railway, running for 4,000 kilometres from the plateau of Tibet to Beijing, is complete and in working order. Here is Mr. Zhang to explain all this to us.
Welcome to not only the highest, but the most ambitious railway in the world. This has been made possible by 40,000 people working together and by overcoming some enormous engineering challenges. We engineers have completed 80 kilometres of tunnels and bridges, nearly all built higher than 3,800 metres above sea level.
This project must have taken you ages to build.
It was actually begun in 1950, and by 1984 the line had reached Gulmud in western Qinghai. We then thought of extending it further. However, at 6,500 metres above sea level, the Kunlun Mountains, plus the Tibetan Plateau, and the consistently high passes and permafrost grasslands would have made the job too difficult.
But you have triumphed, and now you've done all of this, and there are proposals to extend the railway line further to the Indian border, perhaps, or even across the Himalayas.
Yes, that is so. In 2001, it was decided to take up the challenge, and here we are. We completed it a year ahead of schedule. Technology has advanced so much in recent years that this has made our £2.3 billion project possible.
Will travellers on the railway feel ill at such high altitudes?
Our highest railway pass is at 5,200 metres, so yes, passengers could suffer from lack of oxygen. The train's manufacturer, a Canadian firm, has included double-paned windows with ultraviolet filters to reduce glare from the sun. They have also installed oxygen level regulators in the coaches, and these come into operation when the altitude changes. In fact, anyone feeling ill can breathe in oxygen-rich air at various locations in the train. We need all these health and safety measures. After all, the 4,000-kilometre journey from Beijing to Lhasa lasts 48 hours.
Oh, those precautions sound very good and should make it easier for people to travel on this route. But won't the use of this line damage the environment?
Much of the land on the Tibetan Plateau has frost under the surface and is particularly affected by global warming. To neutralise this, the railway relies on a system of metal posts half buried in the soil. These will channel heat to the surface to keep the track working in freezing conditions.
Are you all very excited by this new railway? Surely it will make travel and communication from what was once such a remote part of the world so much easier for you.
Yes, but on the other side, the whole world may flood in to visit us and could wreck our fragile culture. We have to strike a balance between modern technology and its advantages and our traditional way of life. The train drivers are often reminded of this when camels wander over the track. The area belonged to the animals before the railway came. But there are lovely moments on this journey. You can visit Tangu La, the highest station in the world. Or you can cross a great river on hundreds of kilometres of rail bridge.
Mr. Zhang, we wish you much success with the highest railway, the railway in the clouds. Thank you.
That is the end of question 9. In a moment, you will hear question 10. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 10. Listen to the following talk about satellite navigation systems for cars, and then answer the questions below. You will hear the talk twice.
What is a satellite navigation system? Put simply, it comprises a small screened unit which rests on the dashboard of a car. This small device will now guide the everyday motorist to his destination, using signals emitted from satellites which orbit the Earth thousands of miles out in space. This all sounds rather too much, when really all we have to do to get from our starting point to our destination is to look in a book of maps and note the roads to follow. But no, satellite navigation has been hailed as the most exciting scientific development of recent years. Drivers need no longer drive round in circles, frustrated and angry because they have lost their way. Satellite navigation, or sat-nav, as it's commonly called, reduces this stress and saves time, because the driver goes straight to the required destination without getting lost. It also saves money on the petrol used for diversions, and it helps traffic to flow smoothly because everyone knows where they are going and which turning they should take. It's good for the environment too, because it reduces the time drivers waste sitting in cars with the engine running while they try to find the correct route. So how exactly does a satellite navigation system work? The satellites simply send out signals. They can pinpoint the position of an object, in this case the sat-nav owner's car, anywhere on Earth to within 3 meters, apart from at the polar ice caps. Incredible! The same satellites can also track the speed of the vehicle, perhaps a rather worrying feature for some drivers who drive too fast. The sat-nav just needs the postcode of its destination and it's ready for action. It all sounds very complicated, but in fact, it's getting simpler all the time. 5 years ago, a satellite navigation system for a car had lots of wires to connect, and it cost several thousand pounds. It took up quite a lot of dashboard space. Nowadays, new cars come with a built-in sat-nav, or the motorist can purchase a system for under £200. It's easy to fit, and the instructions are clear. You just connect the wire to the cigarette lighter. It all sounds wonderful, but beware. A few drivers have been directed through deep fords and high mountain passes, or told to do a U-turn on a motorway. Use your common sense and don't rely exclusively on this mechanical satellite navigation system. Another disadvantage is that these units are very popular with thieves, so the motorist should always remove the system for safety when the vehicle is parked. For more information and advice on tried and tested satellite navigation systems for the motorist and for the best internet prices, try the website www.satnavsystems.com.
Now you will hear the talk again.
What is a satellite navigation system? Put simply, it comprises a small screened unit which rests on the dashboard of a car. This small device will now guide the everyday motorist to his destination, using signals emitted from satellites, which orbit the Earth thousands of miles out in space. This all sounds rather too much, when really all we have to do to get from our starting point to our destination is to look in a book of maps and note the roads to follow. But no, satellite navigation has been hailed as the most exciting scientific development of recent years. Drivers need no longer drive round in circles, frustrated and angry because they have lost their way. Satellite navigation, or sat-nav, as it's commonly called, reduces this stress and saves time, because the driver goes straight to the required destination without getting lost. It also saves money on the petrol used for diversions, and it helps traffic to flow smoothly because everyone knows where they are going and which turning they should take. It's good for the environment too, because it reduces the time drivers waste sitting in cars with the engine running while they try to find the correct route. So how exactly does a satellite navigation system work? The satellites simply send out signals. They can pinpoint the position of an object, in this case the sat-nav owner's car, anywhere on Earth to within 3 meters, apart from at the polar ice caps. Incredible! The same satellites can also track the speed of the vehicle, perhaps a rather worrying feature for some drivers who drive too fast. The sat-nav just needs the postcode of its destination, and it's ready for action. It all sounds very complicated, but in fact, it's getting simpler all the time. 5 years ago, a satellite navigation system for a car had lots of wires to connect, and it cost several thousand pounds. It took up quite a lot of dashboard space. Nowadays, new cars come with a built-in sat-nav, or the motorist can purchase a system for under £200. It's easy to fit, and the instructions are clear. You just connect the wire to the cigarette lighter. It all sounds wonderful, but beware. A few drivers have been directed through deep fords and high mountain passes, or told to do a U-turn on a motorway. Use your common sense and don't rely exclusively on this mechanical satellite navigation system. Another disadvantage is that these units are very popular with thieves, so the motorist should always remove the system for safety when the vehicle is parked. For more information and advice on tried and tested satellite navigation systems for the motorist and for the best internet prices, try the website www.satnavsystems.com.
That is the end of question 10 and of the test. In a moment,